KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. We had an election yesterday, and of course we have to have Paul Gessing, Rio Grande Foundation, in studio to talk to us about what happened and what it means. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good to be back with you, Jim. And a lot happened, both nationally and here in New Mexico. And from a fiscal conservative, free market perspective, it was a pretty darn good night.
Yeah. Hey, I've got an idea before we get started I want to talk to you about. I think KLYT wants to be part of a Rio Grande record-setting interview series with Paul Gessing. Here's my idea. You go from one interview to another, so I'm thinking we ought to really orchestrate it. Let's go get like 12 radio stations, okay? And you will interview for 1 hour on each one of those radio stations. And at, toward the end of the interview, we'll hook you up by phone to the next radio station. So it'll overlap maybe 4 or 5 minutes. And while you're driving, or we'll drive you, somebody will be on the phone. You'll be interviewing on the phone. Then you get to the next studio. I think we could do 12 in a day. What do you think?
Sounds like fun.
And you would not run out of topics.
No,
either.
I wouldn't. The closest I've ever come to that was last year, and I think 2 years prior, maybe it was just last year, but last night, we did election coverage down in Alamogordo and Cloudcroft, and I spent some time with those folks talking about the results. But the previous year, and I've done PBS, NPR stations, coverage before. And you know, they don't have commercials.
Right.
Even you guys have more commercials than them.
So you got to fill a little bit, yeah.
But I was doing another station on the top of the hour breaks with the NPR station. So it was nonstop for 3 straight hours of pretty much talking. I had to go to the bathroom really bad by the end of that 3 hours.
I just wonder what the Guinness Book of World Records for radio interviews are. And if there is a guy that can set the record, it's Paul Gessing.
All right.
Let our listeners know, Paul's a frequent contributor to the program. He's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. The mission of the Rio Grande Foundation is to increase liberty and prosperity for all New Mexico by informing citizens of the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. Everything Paul talks about on the show, you can go to riograndefoundation.org and find bibliographical information, other research stuff that's being done. And so I find it a very valuable resource because Paul's not just asking you to believe him. He's got a lot of data supporting the things that he talks about. So, Paul, let's start and talk about the national level and other states. We have a big election, mayoral or a governorship, the Republicans won in Virginia, which was pretty surprising.
Yeah, and just to fully put a ribbon on that, we are a nonpartisan organization, but we have strong views and opinions on issues of individual liberty and limited government that lead us to political conclusions regarding who we think is going to be maybe a better candidate for certain things. And yeah, the Virginia governor's race, Virginia and New Jersey both do off-cycle governor elections and actually legislative elections. At least I know that happened in Virginia where they had a big change in their House of Delegates. But the big race was the governor's race. Glenn Youngkin, a neophyte to politics, took on Terry McAuliffe. He was, you know, for many years, kind of one of Bill Clinton's right-hand men. He was governor of Virginia 4 years ago. And in Virginia, you can't run for consecutive terms. So it's 4 years, and then you're out no matter what. So Terry McAuliffe had been the governor of Virginia before. But the issue of education, critical race theory, but also, you know, just who controls educating your kids became a very serious topic. And Terry McAuliffe said in debates, said a lot of times during the campaign, parents should basically step aside, let the professionals do it, let the education system educate their kids. I think this was an unforced error, to say the least. I mean, yes, Terry McAuliffe does come from the pro-union, pro-bureaucracy, education system kind of line of thinking, but that doesn't have to be where Democrats come down. He did, and it became a very big issue, and Glenn Youngkin took advantage of it. In a state that had been trending blue, as the unfortunate trend of the D.C. suburbs growing and growing and growing with the size of the federal government, more and more bureaucrats need places to live, and they vote. And Virginia had been trending blue, and Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, took advantage of that and won the race, and he'll be the governor for 4 years.
I'm just going to say for the record that I believe for myself, and I think a lot of our listeners, I think the majority, we're not standing aside and letting anybody teach our children without our participation.
Hey, I hope so, and we saw echoes of that here in Albuquerque, certainly during the Albuquerque Public School Board election. We're not quite ready to take it down to that level yet. We've still got a few minutes to talk about national issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the New Jersey governor's race, another state with a surprisingly strong Republican showing. Nobody was even talking about that one. It was all Youngkin and what he was going to do. Even if he got close, that would be big news. Now we've got Cinderella. I can't even – he's Cinderella maybe in a certain sense, but – Philip Murphy was the incumbent Democrat, and Chiattarelli was the Republican. And right now, as of this conversation, it's too close to call. There's going to be a recount. It is going to be really interesting to see if somehow the Republican pulls out New Jersey. Holy cow, you're going to have Democrats running around like chickens with their heads cut off. These are big wins, and Youngkin was surprising. New Jersey would be downright shocking.
You know, I had people tell me that when Joe Biden was elected, that it was going to take 10 years for the Republican Party to recover. And I said, no, if you don't do what God wants you to do, it doesn't take very long for him to make everybody aware of that. And I just think that there's both parties. You got to start doing things the way we're supposed to do them, the way the Bible says to do them. And I know, Paul, that... you don't come on this show to talk to us about faith and politics and those kind of things, but you're a person of faith. You're a dad. You want to take care of your kids. You want to do things the best for them, and so I appreciate the time that you spend here. Let's talk a little bit about the local election results. I was kind of surprised at how easily Tim Keller won the mayor's race.
I was, but, you know, it is an indicator of, I think, the flawed campaign of Manny Gonzalez, the sheriff. He got into ethics issues. Then he made claims against Keller during the bait and didn't really substantiate them. I think it was, you know, a race that he could have really made a positive impact in and just didn't do the right things to win the mayoral race. And, you know, Eddie Aragon, he's a great radio host, but not somebody who has a lot of name ID outside the radio world in Albuquerque, and, you know, coming at it from kind of this pro-Trump hardline Republican point of view was going to be tough for him. So, yeah, Keller won, obviously. I think it's 56% of the vote, and the other two split the other two-thirds. And, you know, Keller doesn't have to go to a runoff. But there will be runoffs around our city in some very important races over the next month.
Paul, I did have to ask you about some math. I never understand election math, and I never understand campaign math. And let me explain what I mean by that. So I'm watching Tim Keller's ads Monday, the day before the election. And in his ads, he's saying, added 400 new police officers to the Albuquerque Police Department. And I'm thinking to myself, when he was elected, when he took office in 2018, we had a little bit, or we had right around 900 police officers. And now we actually have a few less than 900 police officers. So I could never figure out that math. But what's most surprising to me is there's not a journalist that comes on the air and goes, what are you saying here?
Right.
You know, that here's the facts. And our fact check says that what you're claiming in this ad is not true. I don't hear anybody kicking up the dust about that kind of stuff.
I totally agree. There is a partisan tilt in the media. I don't know that this is a particularly partisan issue. I assume what Keller was saying was we added 400 officers while at the same time maybe 500 left, which is technically true. There's a lot of statements that politicians make going back to the days of Bill Clinton that may have been technically true that aren't really truth. And it would be great if the media did a better job on both sides of the issue of calling the balls and strikes rather than putting their own political aspirations and agendas front and center. But, it was an election that you look around town and the crime that just over the Halloween weekend, we had a number of murders. I drive downtown. It's trashier looking with more homeless than ever. And I'm sure that's the case for places around town. Keller seems to, have said, he did say that he learned some lessons during his first 4 years, but I really remain skeptical that he is going to do the things with our police department and just the overall improvements to the city that need to be done. But he will have a very different city council when he starts again in the new year.
Yeah, so we did have some changing of the guard, so to speak, in the city council.
Yeah, and now two of these are a done deal. We have this runoff issue, and that's what, again, the mayor's race hinged on. But Keller superseded 50%, so he is the mayor coming back. We had Dan Lewis. He'll return to city council there on the west side, more the northwest side of town. And then Luis Sanchez, he defeated Lansena, who was nominated by Keller, and he's in more of the southwestern side of town. Luis Sanchez is my new city council member. I live over near St. Pius, the 10th High School. Dan is more north of Montaño in that area. So those two are done. Those are two incumbents gone, Cynthia Borrego and Lansena. Now there's two other races that are going to a runoff. In a race involving Lori Robertson and a host of other candidates, Robertson being the most conservative, six candidates, it's going to be very difficult to get a majority. So Robertson will have a runoff election for that council
seat. So it's just the first and second place person.
Yes, yes.
That do the runoff.
Yeah, and it's going to be a tough race for Robertson because this was a Democrat seat. This was Diane Gibson. This is a the race where you had, like I said, six candidates. I think five of them were pretty far to the left. So assuming that the Democrat can consolidate that control and those people turn out, she has the opportunity to win. But you never know. I mean, these runoffs are a newfangled deal, could be a low turnout, much different approach. It's all about showing up, whose side shows up in a runoff. And then you have Renee Grout, who got the majority of the votes, but not the statistical majority of 50%, I guess the plurality, to replace Don Harris in the ninth council district in the kind of far northeast Heights and even southeast Heights up near the Four Hills area. So some good news for sure at city council and some potential great news depending on these runoff elections, which could set even a hostile city council up against Mayor Keller. It's certainly not going to be the same more pushover-oriented progressive council that we've seen in the past.
When we come back, we'll have more with Paul Gessing, and we're going to talk a little bit about the school board members that were elected, because I know Paul's pretty interested in that. Paul gets his blood boiling when we start talking about mask mandates and things like that. So stay with us. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, will be with us till 2 o'clock. We'll be right back.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, what if you've had a slow leak? Maybe you don't even know it's behind the wall. How dangerous is black mold to people?
Honestly, it's bigger here than it is anywhere. So my business partner, he ran a company in California for 20 years. doing mold mitigation, restoration, flood damage, and that's why we do that here as well. We've done more mold mitigation here in the past 3 years than he's done in 20 years in California.
Bosky Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
Hi, I'm Mateo. I was thinking about killing myself. My school sent someone over to talk to me. They called it an assessment. If I wasn't around then, my mom wouldn't have to get food for me. She could just worry about my sister and my little brother, and not me. We're just always hungry. Will you stand for me?
One in four children in New Mexico aren't sure where their next meal will come from. And this Thanksgiving, thousands of children right here in our community may not have a Thanksgiving meal at all. This year, Feed NM Kids aims to provide Thanksgiving dinner to over 2,000 food insecure children and their families. A donation of just $50 feeds a family of four. You can donate now at feednmkids.com/food drive.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with us this afternoon. We're talking about the results of the election. Before we go to talking about the school board, though, I was kind of surprised, Paul, that the stadium initiative for New Mexico United was defeated.
Well, the polls that we saw, both from the paper, ABQ, the paper early on, and then Brian Sanderoff in the Albuquerque Journal, indicated that voters were pretty skeptical of the stadium. The Rio Grande Foundation, in terms of issue areas that we advocated on, we were most interested in the stadium and not having taxpayer dollars go to fund that particular facility. We also think it's a terrible mistake, given the crime issues and given the homelessness issues, to put that stadium downtown. And I think it's probably beneficial to the team itself for the long term. They may try a play. It may involve tax dollars at the state level. But on election night, voters overwhelmingly turned down on a 2-to-1 basis the taxpayer-funded United Stadium. There were too many unknowns, too many concerns about the money that was going to be up for the city or the taxpayers. $50 million was never going to pay for this entire facility. And where it was going to be located, all kinds of serious concerns that made it not ready for prime time. And the voters rightly caught onto that and pushed back and voted against it. So that was very big. And ironically, given Keller's reelection numbers, Tim Keller was at least initially identified with the stadium. Most notably, he put it on the ballot and seemed to be really pushing hard for it. So I guess voters liked Keller enough or didn't like the other candidates enough, but they didn't like his stadium one little bit.
Did not like the stadium. And, of course, we wish the New Mexico United all the success. In fact, it's pretty fun to go to the lab and watch a soccer game. Mm-hmm. I'm one of those guys. If it's not broken, don't fix it. They seem to have a pretty good thing going over there.
Yeah, and we'll see how that all shakes out. Like we've talked about with the New Mexico State budget, there's a lot of money up there, and no offense to any drunken sailors out there, but that is what is going to be happening in January. So that's where our attention is going to be facing, is to the 30-day session down the road. But we've still got some loose ends to wrap up for this show and this election, and school board education, big issue.
Well, and Paul, I was surprised by the journal article this morning because I'm naive. I learned so much from you when you're on the show, but I didn't realize that there were school board candidates that were literally nominated and endorsed by the teachers union And then the paper alluded to some that were endorsed by the business community.
Right.
I think they may have been referring to organizations like yourself and Carlos Sontag with the New Mexico Business Coalition.
Well, I would say, and not just because we're a nonpartisan organization that doesn't get involved in those directly, I would say it was the broader business community. Mm-hmm. And New Mexico Business Coalition is a great organization. They work with us. They're more ideologically driven at their core, supporting businesses. And
right.
we are as well looking at the issues. We look at it through the prism of, is this free market? Is this restoring individual control and autonomy over their lives? Or is this taking decisions and money away from individuals and families and sticking it in some bureaucracy far away, whether it's Santa Fe or Washington, D.C.? So we're talking about, you know, just the typical businesses, the restaurants and the home builders and the realtors and the people that really rely on a healthy economy for their livelihoods here locally. And those folks stepped up. And it's been a long time coming. I think the mandatory paid sick leave battle and the ballot measure on that a few years ago really galvanized those folks. And they realized that they need to work on the menu at the restaurant and not just be on the menu, because when you don't engage in trying to get the political establishment moving in a better direction, you wind up getting taken advantage of by them. So I applaud the businesses and the coalition that developed to fight on behalf of the candidates. And, you know, I've always said in New Mexico that it's not that the unions, and we're not New Jersey. We're not a state that has that strong union manufacturing base going back decades and decades. It's just that we have such a weak business community that we've never had that counterweight to the unions and their advocacy, whether it's in Santa Fe or in these local races. And so the business community put up some candidates. They funded them. And, you know, obviously we talked about city council, but in the school board races as well, which often are overlooked, there were some good candidates that wound up winning. Courtney Jackson won a race. She's a pro-market, pro-reform person. Crystal Tapia Romero on, again, the southwest side of town, she won. And there's a few other candidates who I don't know as well, but they weren't beloved by the unions. And that enough is a good reason for me. Yeah, because the unions, and unions can play a useful role in the private sector, I believe. Because here, take an example. UPS and FedEx, what we know now, they both have union involvement, but they're also competing in a free market.
Yes.
So if the unions get too powerful, you'll see customers go away. You'll see prices increase. You'll see all kinds of things happen that correct for that. And of course, there's post office, there's DHL, there's other services available. They don't have monopolies. The problem is when you have government unions, something that even Franklin Delano Roosevelt opposed, then you have problems. You can't have a government monopoly with access to the taxpayer dime and unions involved, because the unions suddenly become the funding and lobbying force for the status quo. And that's what, unfortunately, the education teachers unions have become, is the status quo force politically.
Well, you talk about the election for the school board members, and now we've kind of shifted the focus a little bit to the teachers and unions, but then we have the department, the public education department.
Mm-hmm.
And they're considering some social studies curriculum. Basically, they're considering critical race theory to introduce it. And you've got an article on your blog about how they've shut down public comments about that.
Well, so not public comments. They've shut down a public meeting that was to be held on the 12th. It will now be a Zoom-only meeting. I still highly encourage people, you know, whether you were planning to go up to Santa Fe for a meeting at the public education department or not to make your comments, you should definitely go to riograndefoundation.org/CRT to make comments on these social studies standards that are going to be taught in all of our schools. Michelle Lujan Grisham, the governor, and the PED are rolling these out. It's not just about their use of terms and aspects that are going to divide people on racial and ethnic lines by talking about things like equity. It's not equality, it's equity. Equity is equality of outcomes. It's basically socialism. Equality is we're going to treat you all equally under the law. So those concepts, and they're rife with them, and I could go into all kinds of different components, but at riograndefoundation.com/CRT, we have it all written out. You can see the troubling components. You can see comments that we sent in. Again, the public comments period, if you want to do the Zoom thing, you can find that link at that website.
Give that website again.
riograndefoundation.org/CRT. So the PED has put a Zoom link out. You can find that at that website 1 to 5 p.m. on November the 12th. So that's Friday the 12th, not this Friday, but next Friday. Unfortunately, you won't be able to go there in person. I suspect they would probably not want large group of people showing up and, you know, maybe yelling or causing a scene. You know, this stuff gets pretty passionate. We've had that in Virginia. It's one of the reasons the gubernatorial race went the way it did, because when you have your kids and you believe that they are your kids and you're going to guide them and you want expertise and help from the education system, you don't want that education system then turning around and teaching them to hate themselves because they're white or hate themselves because they're Hispanic, because in New Mexico, it's a little unique.
Yes.
You got the founding of New Mexico with the Spaniards coming in, and there were terrible things done to the Native Americans.
Yes.
We should teach that. We should be accurate about that. But that doesn't mean we should modern day feel guilty about the misdeeds of our ancestors. We need to acknowledge them, move on, and try to do the best we can to all minority groups, all groups moving forward.
And we absolutely have to learn from what we've done wrong. I mean, no doubt about it. Paul, like we talked to you, and your insights, you give us, I think, a very broad overview. You give us differing points of view. You don't just complain. You always suggest best practices where you find them other places because of your research. This issue has been particularly interesting to me because I'm white. You're white. I wanted to make sure that I spoke with someone in the black community that really understood these issues and really put some study in it. Well, lo and behold, I run across a Clarence Washington Jr. He's a local pastor in Albuquerque from Chicago. He's written a 4-volume set of books called Hijacked. And here's the basic premise of his book. He believes that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech was a God-inspired speech, not like scripture. I don't want to misinform anyone. He believes that, like the Gettysburg Address and other mm-hmm. famous speeches, that men of faith were inspired by God to share these words and inspire Americans. He believes that Dr. King's speech has a biblical perspective of forgiveness and a calling on the black community, black leadership in churches, black leadership throughout this country, to lead a revival of forgiveness and dedication to God and our families. And he believes that's the calling, not calling for reparations, not calling for, more division like through critical race theory. And I would encourage anybody to take a look at this 4-book series. It's called Hijacked: How Dr. King's Dream Became a Nightmare. He will be joining my show to talk about his 4th volume a week from now, and you can go to abqconnect.online and see the other interviews. But this is a international quality research project that Pastor Clarence Washington has put together. So I just wanted to mention that because I love when good creative, really dedicated people from New Mexico are involved, like Paul Gessing. Paul, let's shift gears real quick and talk about critical race theory just real quickly. These public comments about this, you can go one more time to the website. And when will that meeting be held?
riograndefoundation.org/CRT. And that meeting is next Friday, the 12th of November, 1 to 5 p.m. in the afternoon. And if you do the comments, written comments, emailed comments, you can even mail them. I don't recommend doing that at this point because the post office is pretty slow. You can fax them, though, which is kind of crazy. And, dust off the old fax machine. But I recommend emailing the Public Education Department. Again, we have draft comments that we submitted ourselves. We have all of the perplexing and frustrating things. And it's not just about CRT or CRT light being taught in New Mexico schools and advocated for by the PED required. It's also the micromanaging of the teachers in the classroom. And, you know, unfortunately, that is an aspect of the government system of education, is that you get these bureaucrats and they think that you need to teach things one way to every kid. And we already have challenges in our state and in our nation with this one size fits all education bureaucracy. We need to allow a little more leeway to professional teachers within reason, understanding that the parents are the ultimate customers as well as the students for what's being taught in the schools.
Paul Gessling, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio. He'll be with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about PNM and the acquisition of PNM by Avangrid that has been rejected. I don't even know what that means, but we're going to talk about it when we come back. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect.
Men, do you desire to study the deeper things of God? Cross Christian Fellowship College goes in-depth in apologetics, teaching, and doctrines. Study the difference between Calvinism and Arminianism, views of the rapture, eisegesis, and exegesis. This special mentorship-style college is low-cost and only one night a week. Get information online at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org.
Have you ever dreamt of a career in radio? Do you have a passion to serve Jesus? Well, at KLYT, we're looking to hire a few part-time board operator positions, and you could be the candidate we're looking for. As we return to normal, our need for help has only increased. Whether engineering live services from Calvary Church, assisting with production, or being involved with events, this could be your opportunity to serve in ministry while also getting on-the-job training in radio. Shoot us your resume online at calvarynm.church/jobs.
This is a Fresh Thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
I love the book of Jonah. Of course, we learned about it as a kid, and he's in the sea, and this great big sea creature comes to get him. But the truth is, there's a lot of material for us to apply to our regular daily lives from it. Jonah says to God, "I don't want to live anymore. I wish I was dead. I don't want to be here." And those feelings in the moment, he's honest about it. But I love that he's bringing the feelings to God. We're going to feel lots of different things, have lots of different thoughts, have lots of different emotions. And like my friend Lisa Turkers likes to say, feelings are wonderful indicators, but terrible dictators. Meaning we should see them as prompts to do something. Like Jonah took that feeling and brought it to God in prayer. You can tell God how you feel. You don't have to sanitize your prayer life. Tell him exactly what you're feeling, but don't let your emotions be dictators telling you what to do. Instead, use them as a prompt to pray.
For more Fresh Thoughts, go to levilusco.com.
The KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at essenmacherdental.com.
Among the many things we have going on in Albuquerque that are not real positive are things like human trafficking. And Toya Kaplan and her organization, Vulnerable No More, have an event just for women Friday, November 5th. They're going to be meeting at the Believer Center of Albuquerque, 320 Waterfall Drive. That's up near Central and Tramway. Neat that Believer Center is making the facility available. You can go in person or you can live stream. The event starts at 6 o'clock p.m. or doors open at 6. The event starts at 6:30. And what they're doing is inviting women. It's an absolutely free event, but they want, you're going to hear some special speakers about people that have been trafficked. I mean, it's going to be an amazing time. They want to empower the community to have the knowledge about what's going on, and I think it's going to be a valuable event. So everybody is invited. Women, I should say, are invited November 5th, Believer Center. Doors open at 6. The program starts at 6:30, and that's for the Vulnerable No More event this Friday, November 5th. Paul Gessing in studio. Paul, we've all been reading in the paper or seeing on the local TV stations that PNM and Avangrid, which is a international energy provider, were going to merge. And apparently the PRC's rejected that.
Yeah, and the Rio Grande Foundation has not taken a position one way or the other on the Avangrid merger. Our main issue in the utility sphere, so to speak, has been the Energy Transition Act, which was the law passed in 2019 that really transforms New Mexico's electricity generation system by shutting down large amounts of traditional coal or even getting out of nuclear and other sources of electricity.
Well, now the Four Corners Generating Station is shut down now, right? Or is it almost shut down?
No, San Juan is the one owned by PNM. Four Corners is one that New Mexico has a component, a part of. So there's two stations. San Juan closes in June, and we have deep concerns. PNM has deep concerns about the ability to provide the kind of power that we're going to need when the air conditioning units come on in June and July and August next summer. Now, this transition has set the stage for this Avangrid merger. Basically, Avangrid is a Spanish-controlled green energy company that saw an opportunity, or was this merger, this law was passed with an eye towards giving Avangrid an opportunity to come in, buy PNM, and really transform it fully into a completely green energy business. Now, whether there was backroom deals made ahead of time or not, it's hard to say, but that was the deal. And our governor has her fingers in this entire situation. But the Energy Transition Act really requires the green energy. So that made them, PNM, something that Avangrid was looking to purchase. They had gone through this process, made specific offers. PNM's stock price went up. There's golden parachutes being prepared. And then the PRC, though, Public Regulation Commission, has a seat at the table, and they have final say over this merger. And so you have what's called a hearing officer, and they are knowledgeable about these utilities. They look through all the books and the numbers, and they did a real deep dive to see whether this was a merger that made sense for us, the customers. And basically, to make a long story short, they came back and said no. Now, this is a recommendation made to the elected Public Regulation Commission. They could overturn it. It would be very difficult. They are an elected body, and we'll see how that shakes out. However, the reasons given involved, there's a bunch of side deals struck. You know, this is a political state. There's different groups that want a seat at the table, and they say, well, we're opposing this, but if you give us something, like in the case of the IBEW, a union of electrical workers, if you make these jobs all union, then we'll go along and endorse it. And other people, other special interest groups, got a seat at the table and said, we're going to say no unless you give us something to make us say yes. And that was one of the things cited by the hearing officer as problematic. Also, the reliability of Avangrid and their other assets, including Maine. There's a lot of back and forth in the journal about Maine. They received a lot of complaints. They had a lot of outages, and there were a lot of issues up there. So people in Maine didn't think that Avangrid was doing a great job. And then there was, essentially corruption scandals back in Spain that the parent company had to deal with. And finally, like I said, this is a utility that is going to be raising or doing whatever they do to rates, probably raising, with the blessing of the Public Regulation Commission, which regulates them. And essentially, this hearing officer just said that the deal did not make sense for the ratepayers. So we'll see. It's going to be very interesting to see how this all shakes out in the next 6 months to a year.
And if you're listening now and you're driving and you're getting in and out of your car or any of those things and you can't really concentrate on what Paul's talking about, you can go to errorsofenchantment.com. Is that link also available at Rio Grande Foundation?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm going to make it really simple. Go to riograndefoundation.org. Look for errors enchantment links, and you can go and read about this, and I'll also post it on our abqconnect.online. Again, a lot more information than we can cover here on the radio, but I'm glad you're listening, and I want to make sure you have enough basic information so you know what questions to ask. Most important thing for me in every election since I've met Paul Gessing is that I now know what to even ask our candidates and things because of the education Paul gives us. Paul, what do you mean in your notes that New Mexico House Speaker fails on basic economics and tries to stoke sexism at UNM?
Well, you'll appreciate this as a former Lobo. So the UNM basketball tickets are on sale. People can buy seats for the men's and women's teams to go over to the pit and watch the games. And we're all blessed because finally we get to go in person. And
yay,
the basketball players, both teams get to play in their home stadium, a home arena. They don't have to stay in exile because of the governor's absurd orders under COVID-19 last year. So we all welcome that. And essentially, the Lobos put out an advertisement saying, here are the ticket prices for season tickets. This is like the bare lowest price you can get them for. Well, what the speaker objected to was that, this is Speaker Brian Egolf, $199 was the baseline for the men's, $109 for the women. And he said that this was sexism and unequal treatment by New Mexico's flagship institution. And this was all Twitter related, so you can follow me. I know if we haven't given you enough already, at PGESSING on Twitter, if you're on that platform. There's a lot of garbage on there, but sometimes you get these wonderful moments. And I got to engage with the House Speaker, and the first thing was, do you understand the concept of supply and demand in economics? You know, the Lobo men, they can pack the pit full of 15,000 people pretty regularly. And that is a financial incentive for UNM to raise those prices. Women, actually, UNM's women's teams do very well on their attendance relative to the national standard.
And by the way, they are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm going to qualify this. I want you to know, and I'm, you know, I've been involved in coaching a long time. Women run the plays like chess players. I mean, they do everything the way it's supposed to be done. I love to watch the women's game, but it is a little different than the men's game. And I wish that they would give as many tickets out there for $5 as you could possibly can, because then we might be able to pack the pit for the women's games.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ideas that we could talk about offline on that. You know, they now have the games, at least in the conference, the Mountain West, opposite each other. So if the Lobos are playing Colorado State, the men are up at Colorado State. Colorado State's women's team, chances are, will be here playing against the Lobo ladies, which makes, if you're just a basketball fan, you want to go to as many of those games as possible. You have to pick your poison, and it's really a silly way to do things, in my humble opinion. However, that's not what we're here to talk about. It's just stoking this division and the speaker trying to make it look like UNM is somehow mistreating the Lady Lobo athletes. And putting aside the pricing differential, and, you know, if I'm the athletic director, my goal is to have as many people in the arena as possible watching the games for as much money as I can get out of them, because I want to balance my budget and make sure that we can spend money on certain things around the program. And so he just draws the line in a different place, and I think it's a reasonable way to draw those lines. It's not about sexism or treating one group differently from the other. And, oh, by the way, and this is the last thing I called out the speaker for, it's not like the women or the men are taking home any of that money. So this isn't a situation where it's, oh, we're paying them different. Well, these aren't professional athletes. These are student athletes in college. And, yeah, there's some new rules about how
and by the way, the student athletes are paid the same.
Right, zero.
The ones that are on scholarship, they get the same scholarships. Yeah,
they get the scholarship or a take-home paycheck of $0. And, you can use likeness and those kinds of things, but that's not the same as getting a part of the ticket revenue. So it's a it's something that I think he understands, because everybody intuitively understands the idea of supply and demand. It's just virtue signaling, and it's easy to do that in a platform like Twitter. But I wanted to make sure to call out our Speaker of the House here in New Mexico, a Democrat, of course, on that issue.
Internationally, there is a climate summit going on in Scotland, and our fair governor is in attendance, as is the President of the United States. And I'm wondering, Paul, how they got there without a large carbon footprint. We'll talk about that when we come back.
All right.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, just how intelligent were the Neanderthal people?
Chris, the Neanderthals were people just like me and you. They were descendants of at least one of the tribes that migrated away from the Tower of Babel. Perhaps they lived in harsh conditions, but they were fully human. Archaeologists have even found that they had musical instruments, using the hollowed-out bones of animals perforated with holes like a flute. When replicas of these are made, it's found that they used the same musical scale that we use today. Mostly, they preferred minor keys. Of course, even the Israelites are known for their songs in minor keys, producing beautiful but haunting melodies. You see, Chris, even Neanderthals go back to Genesis, and so should we.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
It can be adorable when a toddler thinks you can't see them just because they've covered their eyes. As we grow up, we know better. Or do we? Billy Graham says men and women have been hiding in plain sight since the beginning of time.
After Adam and Eve had disobeyed the Lord and judgment had been pronounced against them, they went and hid themselves. They were afraid to be in the presence of God because their deeds were evil. But you can't hide yourself from God. In the book of Psalms it says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? I can't get away from you, God." Don't try to run from God. Run toward God, to Jesus Christ, who loves you.
Are you ready to stop hiding from God and start running toward Him? We can help. Check out findpeacewithgod.net. That is findpeacewithgod.net. We're the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation is in studio. RioGrandeFoundation.org is a great place to find out about New Mexico politics and what's going on. And Paul really does give kind of a bipartisan perspective. Not just kind of, he does. He looks at everybody's perspective. He looks at out-of-state solutions that people have found, best practices for different issues that are out there. How do you think Joe Biden and Michelle Lujan Grisham are getting to Scotland?
Yeah, well, as you alluded to before the break, the climate summit called COP26, and I don't even know what COP means. It's over in Scotland, which I would love a nice trip to Scotland, but
you'd be on a golf course though.
There you go. At least I'd be awake, unlike Joe Biden. There was footage of him nodding off in one of these. You know, he talks about how just this is literally the end of the world if we don't act, and yet he is there falling asleep. He's not, doesn't seem that concerned about the situation if he's falling asleep in those presentations. But 400, according to the UK's Daily Telegraph newspaper, 400 VIPs arrived on private jets for this big environmental conference. And you know, Jeff Bezos of Amazon is one of those. Of course, Joe Biden took Air Force One over. Our own governor, as you said, is over there as well. Now, I don't know how she got there, but Rio Grande Foundation has issued a public records request to the governor and her staff to find out what exact arrangements were made. Because at worst, I think she took first class. I suspect she didn't fly coach from the Sunport all the way over to Scotland. I would love to have in my quaking little hands at some point something saying that she flew on a private plane, because those private planes, I think the UK, again, the Daily Mail said that those 400 jets are the CO2 emissions of 1,600 British citizens for an entire year. It just shows you it's about virtue signaling. It's just like the Brian Egolf tweet, the Speaker of the House. It's this whole conference is set up to virtue signal. They could do all of this stuff on Zoom and Biden could get his naps in much more easily rather than having to fly all the way over to Scotland. 400 people in their private planes go and preach and nag to us about the environment and why we shouldn't fly on a commercial jet or buy an SUV. It's absolutely nutty. And it's just the reason I think a lot of these people are losing their credibility.
Paul, I want to ask you, is it too early for us to start thinking about the November election next year? Because you mentioned the Speaker of the House, Brian Egolf. I want our listeners, our voters that are listening right now to, you know, maybe make a little note about these things that he's doing. I want you to take into consideration some of the things that Michelle Lujan Grisham is doing, because we're going to be electing a new governor next November 2nd.
Well, as somebody who does this stuff full time and eats, breathes, and drinks this stuff, I'm not thinking about just the next election. I'm thinking about the election 2 years after that. And there's a lot going on to really turn around New Mexico and what policies will be in play, what will the people at the top of the ticket be like, and how will these impact the results and potential outcomes for this election. Obviously, there's a lot of people already lining up for governor as Republicans to run for that office against Michelle Lujan Grisham. And I'll say that one person in particular, of course, we haven't talked since Mark Ronchetti, I believe, announced. Regardless, I give that man credit because he doesn't have – there's no safety net for him. He – if he loses, he – foregoes his job as a meteorologist, probably has to leave the state of New Mexico, make a very big move for his family. There's only a handful of those meteorology jobs in the country. Certainly New Mexico with Channel 4, Channel 7, and Channel 13, you know, there's maybe eight of them in total. And I know Channel 13's already said, sorry, we're not coming, coming and picking you back up after you run for this office. So it is an indicator that he's putting a lot on the line. And it's also an indicator that the polling data, which I'm confident that he looked at carefully, says that he can win. And I think that is a good sign, because Michelle Lujan Grisham has been still, and she still is, governing this state largely by herself under her COVID protocols and calling the shots in schools where they're still wearing masks, in businesses where they're wearing masks. They'll be wearing masks at the Pit when the Lobos tip off. I think it's ironic that she's not making people wear, get vaccinated to go to the Pit when you know, the COVID situation is no better than it was when the state fair was going on. And certainly the Pit is more pro. If you talk about a place in New Mexico that is crowded full of people likely to spread viruses to one another, it is the Pit.
Well, don't talk her into it.
I'm not trying to. I'm trying to just highlight the hypocrisy of the governor on these issues. So I don't think she will do it, but it is fascinating.
But, Paul, we do have a purpose in what you and I are doing together on the radio. We want people, for the sake of our community, to listen to this information. You just used a term that I had not heard before, but I am going to post this on Facebook. You use the term virtue signal.
Ah, yes.
And I want to read something, and I hope you don't mind if I do this.
Go for
it. I hope you won't be offended by me reading something from Matthew 7:15. It says, "Beware of the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? So every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad trees bear bad fruit. I just have to say to our audience, you can tell people by the fruit that they bear. You absolutely can, and I hope you'll take a close look at that. Now, that's not to say people are without sin. None of us are perfect. But I love the people that make mistakes and go, yep, I blew it, and now I'm going to fix it. Those are the great – that's fruit.
Yeah, and getting back to our governor, she has not exactly said within her tenure in office, oops, I did something that didn't work out. And right now, as we speak, New Mexico is one of a tiny handful of states. We're one of five that have a indoor mask mandate for everybody. California does not.
By the way, I just got back from San Diego. Not a mask in the house. You can go in businesses. You don't have to wear a mask anywhere. I was really surprised by that.
That is amazing, but it only highlights what I've been saying. Yeah, there's a lot of liberal states out there that do not have universal mask mandates indoors. We are right there with Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, Illinois, and then you have New Mexico. And if you read the data, we haven't seen any decline in COVID cases or hospitalizations in New Mexico for several weeks, going back to approximately late August, and then we saw a ramp up, and the state fair, like I said, had not only mask mandate, but the vaccine mandate. Maybe it would have been great if she had just apologized to all the kids. Even if she defended her policy, she could have said, I am so sorry that we have to do this. It is for the health of New Mexico. Even if it's not borne out by the data, having some empathy, and I think that is one of the reasons that she's going to face some really stiff challenges in the November election. So it's never too early to start thinking about it. However, we're going to have, and I know I'm filibustering here a little bit. December 6th, I have it on good authority, that is when the redistricting committee, the special session, is going to kick off in Santa Fe. There's not a lot you can do about it, but there may be other issues added to that agenda starting in just December 6th, so a month away.
So the legislative session is not going to start in January. It's going to start in December.
Well, they'll take a break over Christmas. Then you've got to be involved in those and make sure you show up if you're in those races, those seats for city council, because there's a couple runoffs that'll be also in early December. And then the legislative session, and the governor has all kinds of fun and games for us in the 30-day session, which will kick off in mid-January. It's the Tuesday after Martin Luther King Day.
And you mentioned earlier she has a pile of money. What is she going to do with it?
I expect she will spend every last dime. I hope that she will reform our gross receipts tax and eliminate taxes on Social Security. We'll see, and I think it's going to be fascinating to watch, and I encourage people to get involved in that. Contact your legislators now, because they will be running around like crazy people during the 30-day session.
And not only take action the way Paul has instructed you, but also pray. Pray for our leaders. Pray for people we even disagree with. Thank you so much for joining us today, Paul. Appreciate you.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.